Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, one and all, for joining us here on Queensbury Rules Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensburyRules.com, and here with me, as usual, for the first time in a few weeks, and I'm sorry I'm getting choked up about it, James fucking Foley. James.
Patrick, I'm thrilled to be back.
So, you know, before we get too far into this, I'll just give a warning, just in case. We haven't done the show since I moved to TJ. There might be technical difficulties. I might cut out at some point. I literally have no idea whatsoever what to expect. But if I do cut out and there's silence, number one, Blog Talk will edit that out later if anybody goes to listen to it in the archive, so you probably won't even notice. But also, number two, I'll be right back. The second thing is a quick apology to all the listeners and to you, James, because as some people might have seen yesterday on my Twitter feed, I'm having a serious issue giving any type of fuck lately. So if I insult anybody too fucking bad, I don't really care. Let's go.
Great, man.
You alienated
half the audience.
Good, because if people are fucking bleeding out of their vagina over this, then fuck them anyway. All right, so we got boxing.
Well, you
got
to be one of those guys. You got to be one of those guys. I want you to be the guy who, if you like my enemies, you cannot like me.
Nah, I'm not going to take it that far. I'll try to be fair. And I'm not going to get into the fucking drama either. We'll leave that where it is. But there was some boxing, you know, not a lot, some boxing, or at least what technically could be considered boxing anyway. Shit, I guess let's just start out in Mexico among my people. Johnny Gonzalez took on Jorge Travieso Arce. I mean, I kind of use the phrase took on a little loosely, but yeah, it was a fight. What'd you think, James?
Well, I thought it went about as I expected, to quote the great Manuel Stewart. And to be honest with you, I didn't see the ending. I read about what happened later. So I watched the first like 7 or 8 rounds. You know, I didn't think much of it. I mean, I'd like to see Gonzalez back in there with, you know, Abner Mares or whoever wins a fight with Mares and Santa Cruz. You know, so I wanted to see him back in there with somebody more, a little more, they might have a little bit more left than Jorge Arce. It would just seem like he had every disadvantage possible going into the fight. You know, always a smaller guy, probably a little bit more mileage on him, and against a big hitter, a big featherweight like Gonzalez, is kind of what I figured would happen. So, you know, it was something to pass the time. I mean, I guess there was potential that Arce could have made it into a brawl, but it's just one of those fights I never really thought Arce had a chance to win, so it wasn't that interesting.
Totally.
But, you know, it's what passes for a good fight these days, I guess. Just two people we've heard of.
You know, yeah, the schedule's been light. That's a pretty, you know, that's a nice way of putting it. What we have had for the most part, which we'll get to the whole Showtime thing pretty soon anyway, but it's just not been high quality. I mean, the unfortunate thing about Gonzalez Arce was that I think that most of us, myself included, just expected more. Not necessarily from Arce, because, I mean, you know, for a little guy, a guy who's now at featherweight, which is like his heaviest weight at his age, he's not young, he's been through a lot of wars, he's had a lot of cuts and facial damage over the years, et cetera. I mean, he was up against every odd possible, pretty much like you said. And that's going to be a problem for anybody. And on top of that, Johnny Gonzalez is a good fighter. So, I mean, I think for me, I just expected more from Johnny Gonzalez. I expected a little bit more fire, a little bit more effort to really end the fight. Yeah, I was a little bit disappointed by that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it seemed almost like more of a gentlemanly kind of sparring session the first few rounds. although you always had the sense that if Gonzalez turned it up a little bit, you know, he's a huge puncher for the weight, and it's he's just bigger guy, so and obviously more relevant today, you know. So it played out as expected, but it was just one of those fights where you trot out, you know, a guy with a name, and Arce had, you know, something to fight for, but it just, he was just up against it all night.
Yeah, totally.
I guess that would have been Arce's fifth, you know, title or whatever or fifth weight class, which would have been, kind of significant, even though we shit on the titles most of the time when it's convenient for us.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where, well, number one, I just to give like a tiny bit of background, I think that in Mexico in particular, like belts and titles are a totally different animal. There's not really, in general, of course, there's not really much prejudice against different belts or anything like that. And I mean, it doesn't really matter which belt is on the line. If there's any belt on the line down here, they're going to advertise it as a championship fight. But, you know, just to kind of clear that up, because it's, yeah, the whole belt thing is a little ridiculous.
It's all bullshit, of course. But, you know, I mean, Gonzalez beat a good fighter to get the belt, so it's not a lineal championship or anything, but it's the type of thing that they, you know, would be cited when you talk about, you know, Arce's career down the road when he's a, you know, Hall of Fame candidate or whatever. But obviously he came up short, so...
Yeah, and it's a bummer because it kind of sucks to see a guy like Arce who does, you know, give everything he's got and always, you know, well, generally puts out a good effort, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's a bummer to see him kind of like get waxed like that and get dropped pretty hard in the meantime, but that's how it goes. That's boxing. Dudes get old and, you know, they go out. The kind of funny thing is that the whole background and shit like that to this fight is probably more interesting than what actually wound up happening in the fight itself. I mean, I'm despite being an amateur expert on all things Mexico, I still don't quite understand the whole deal with the networks down here. I mean, basically some network issue was going to initially prevent Johnny Gonzalez versus Jorge Arce from even happening. Like, it seemed as if it would initially be kind of, you know, a barrier between the fights. And in Mexico and a couple other, you know, quote-unquote Latin countries, there's a bit of a split between the networks, not that unlike HBO and Showtime now in the U.S., but the U.S. version has recently gotten considerably more convoluted in the last little while with the whole Heyman shit. But I still don't actually understand what the whole network thing is. I just know that certain carriers, certain cable carriers here, particularly in Mexico, only certain carriers are able to have certain channels or networks. And since certain fighters sign with the networks, then they're unable to, you know, fight other fighters who are signed with other networks. And that was initially going to keep the fight from going. They got past it because, quite simply, I just don't really think Arce had any basis to be like, fuck you, I deserve more money, or anything like that. It was kind of just like Johnny was like, hey, you want the money? I'll give you a shot. But, you know, we got to work something out. So, you know, it was just odd, kind of, because to see the entire card, the preliminaries were on one channel, and then there was like an in-between fight on a totally different channel here. And then I had to switch over to Televisa for the main event, the co-main and the main event. It was just weird. I had never really had to do that before. So just the whole ins and outs of that type of thing is like, we could do an entire show about that. We won't, but we could.
Yeah, a lot of ins, a lot of outs.
Yeah, a lot of what have yous. The editorial we, as it were. But yeah, it was just kind of it was a send off. You know, it was pretty much, as you said, it was like a farewell fight for Jorge Arce. And, you know, the guy deserved it or whatever, but it was just kind of a pain in the ass to have to sit through 11 rounds of that, you know?
Yeah, especially with that horrible Showtime main event, because I actually stayed home on Saturday and watched a lot of the boxing, and just reminded me why... I was enjoying myself and I forgot about the sport for a month.
Well, you know, the funny thing about us total boxing addict sick fucks is that even when it's bad boxing, a lot of the time we can still kind of dig it. You know, like, we can still just, like, crack a beer and, like, you know, watch some shit and bitch about it, if nothing else.
Yeah, there's great, and there's always, you know, during, I mean, there's always some good commentary on Twitter from people and stuff like that. Which makes it more entertaining when the fights are bad. But, yeah, I hear you, man. I just, you know, I don't know. I mean, the quality has gotten so bad that I'd be totally fine just skipping a lot of these cards, you know, and not even watching it. I mean, I'm going to go to the card in Chicago on November 1st, that Showtime quadruple header. But, like, for example,
I was going to ask you if you were going to go to that.
Yeah, I'll go to it just because it's, you know, it's live boxing. It's in Chicago, and I want a chance to see Malignaggi's, like, hair plugs in person. But, you know, that's the kind of card that if I didn't actually like Fanfara and wasn't from Chicago or whatever, I probably, there's no, not really any need to watch that, you know?
Hey, well, you know, Andy Fanfara comes to town. You got to go see him.
Hey, Andy Fanfara is the greatest light heavyweight in the world. Yeah, there's that aspect to it.
Have
but
you seen
you
his
know what I'm saying? Well, I think, you know, boxing is it's a great sport, obviously, at its best. But, you know, there's been a lot of cards this year that I think you would have been totally fine just reading the recap on Boxing Scene the next morning. And nothing, you would not have, you know, you wouldn't question your fandom or anything if you missed those cards. Because, you know, honestly, it's like, I was thinking about this Jermaine Taylor fight tomorrow, and that's probably, like, one of the most watchable cards, you know, in the last couple months. And of course it's a horrible travesty that the fight's even being allowed to happen, but you know, it's like, in this day and age, man, when boxing isn't delivering competitive matchups, it's basically just spectacle, you know. And this kind of morbid curiosity about Jermaine Taylor has probably made this, you know, I mean, this would be a fight if I had to choose between, I did on paper, I liked that Curtis Stevens and Dom fight, and it was a decent fight, I guess. But if I was looking at these last few cards, particularly a couple of the Showtime cards, without knowing what had happened, you know, like Broner and Taylor turned out to be a pretty good fight. But this weird Jermaine Taylor thing is probably going to be, you know, one of the ones I'd be like, okay, yeah, it's fucked up, and I don't really think it should be happening, but I'm going to watch it.
That's kind of how we go with a lot of stuff, though, you know?
I mean, it's like the fact that this train wreck is like the biggest, you know, the fight where, and everyone was so hyped up to see Victor Ortiz against Colazzo for kind of similar reasons, you know? And I think it speaks in some part, yeah, because there's always going to be this like dark humor associated with, you know, certain aspects of the sport. But, you know, that shouldn't outweigh the genuinely, you know, great aspect. And we just haven't been getting enough competitive matchups to really make it happen, you know? And the ones that we have just turned out to not be so, you know, terribly good fights, like Canelo and Lara, some other, I don't know, a couple other ones I'm thinking of. But the real good matchups on paper didn't really deliver, you know, good fights. And you think about Fighter of the Year, Fight of the Year, nothing stands out compared to some of the, you know, winners we've had in the past. I mean, there's been some good stuff, for sure, but I don't think it's on the level of, you know, things like Pacquiao Marquez 4, Corrales Castillo, you know, Marquez
Vasquez.
I mean, it's none of that.
No, there's no question. There's no question that this year quality has dipped, and not just you know, like name matchups. The quality itself has dipped. Not that there haven't been good fights. There have been some pretty good fights. Hell, on that, you know, on the Gonzalez Arce card, there were some damn good scraps on the undercard between guys that I just wasn't familiar with at all. You know, but of course that's different from getting a fight from, you know, a Pacquiao Marquez 4. I mean, that's a prime example.
Yeah, yeah.
Two big-name guys brawling and then an ending that's so shocking that, you know, people are fucking jizzing all over themselves the world over. It was crazy. You know, I mean, and of course, that's an extreme example, but I loved the jizz myself. Go ahead, Tori.
No, it's just that, and I love jizz too, you know, but when you think about a lot of these fights that get nominated for Fight of the Year, you know, a lot of them are fighters we're familiar with from, like, the smaller weight classes or from Japan and whatever, you know. But these fights that have won Fight of the Year that are mostly, like, internet fights where people will watch them the next day because they heard how awesome they are, you know, for me it's like – if there's kind of an equal candidate with, or you know, even maybe a slightly lesser in terms of the action, but with a higher profile, I think that goes a long way. You know, I mean, there's nothing like watching a fight live between two guys you're really invested in that you've watched their whole careers, and having something totally explosive happening and being there, like, you know, that night to see it, like, with no idea how it's going to play out, as opposed to just hearing, like, man, this, like, awesome, like, Japanese flyweight fought this Mexican guy in, like, you know, Dubai, and it was freaking amazing, you know, 8 knockdowns, and we're all watching it on the internet like, the next day. You know, no, I mean, it's just that's
oh,
not,
you're
to,
kidding.
For me, I'm just one of those guys, like, if I was ever voting in any of this shit, I mean, I think the profile has to count for something, you know, and I think that the atmosphere
yeah.
and all that, like, now sometimes, yeah, there's fights that are such extreme bloodbaths that even if you haven't heard of the two guys, it stands out so much that it has to be the winner, but I think that's a lot rarer than what I would do, you know, based on who I've
totally.
Seen win the award in the past,
no,
you know, and the thing
I'm
is,
100%
this year,
with you.
Well, like, who this year? What's even your fight of the year? I mean, I don't even know. I would, like...
I would, honestly, I would probably... I'm kind of leaning... Lucas Matisse versus John Molina, but that is not... It's not a lock. You know what I mean? A lot of the time, they're... Like, when you have... when you're looking at, like, the fights of the year and stuff like that, at the most, you have, like, a handful. You're like, all right, those were good, you know... what's it called? Figueroa Arakawa. That was good, but that's not there. You know what I mean? Like, you're able to kind of single out a couple that were just above that for a couple different reasons, usually for the profile, like you said. And, you know, a really great example is Somsak Chachawal versus Mayar Monchipur from 2006. You know, like, nobody knew who those guys were stateside, really. And a lot of the people, I mean, I actually kind of do have to give some credit to Dan Rayfield, because he helped get the word out about that fight and was like, I don't know if you've guys seen this, but you need to see it, and this is the fight of the year. And rightfully, Ring Magazine, you know, the guys there were like, yep, this is the fight of the year. We don't care if you guys don't know who this is. And that was a really good example of something like that happening. But that's not the usual. You know, usually
and
the fight of the year is going to go to something real notable.
Right, and this year it's a Takayama Rodriguez fight, you know, or the Orlando Salido fight. But man, to me, those just don't stack up. I mean, great fights, but I can't put them up there with like all-time classics. And there's nothing really on the schedule. I mean, unless Hopkins Kovalev turns into something crazy and unexpected, which is really really doubtful, or you know, maybe the Pacquiao fight. But there aren't really that much. I guess Golovkin, if you know, but almost all of these fights, except for Hopkins Kovalev, has a pretty, you know, dominant favorite, or, you know, a pretty heavy favorite going into them. So it just looks like this whole year is just going to be a total waste for the sport, and it's kind of a shame. And what I'm saying is, like, I can't pretend like it hasn't, like, dampened my enthusiasm somewhat to see kind of the way that the business has taken over and all of the kind of shitty mismatches
totally.
We've gotten. You know, is there any reason
no question.
If you read this, like, Al Haymon NBC story, is there any reason to really believe that the guy's going to go to NBC and then all of a sudden you're going to be getting, like, Lucas Matisse and Danny Garcia fighting each other, you know, 3 more times
no.
and all these great fights? I mean, there's no reason to think that he's going to just suddenly change his entire business practice and start making the, you know, the fights the fans want to see. So I don't know.
No,
who knows what's going to happen?
I
guess next year will be interesting. But if we're sitting here a year from now talking about how shitty the sport is, I mean, this is the reason why the sport has gotten marginalized to the point that it has. Because even hardcore fans
totally
are pretty fed up with, you know, the product.
No, there's no question. And as far as the whole Al Haymon deal thing goes, I mean, I have my own concerns about that. Well, naturally, because of Haymon in general, but also I'm kind of worried about the network deal because it's already been bungled a handful of times, even in just the last like decade. And I mean, there have been a couple different pushes where promoters or whomever is going, oh yeah, we're going back to the networks. We're taking boxing back to the networks. And it's like on the surface, that's kind of what it sounds like. And it all sounds well and good, but instead we're not getting it on NBC. We're getting it on NBC Sports, which is a channel that, like, you don't even get unless you have you know, some cable package, which not, you know, is as difficult as it might sound for some people to believe, not everyone has that. Some people still have like basic cable and shit. So, you know, in any event, I'm worried that if they really do take boxing back to an actual network, if we get the same thing that we were getting on Showtime as far as, you know, the fucking around with fighters, then I don't think that's going to help.
No, but, you know, I don't know. We'll see.
It's got promise, and I'm not going to, like, you know, sass it right now without anything even happening, but it worries me, too.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you if you wound up catching the card that was, or the fight that was right before Gonzalez Arce, you know, Adriana Freya versus Celestino Caballero.
Oh yeah, you know what? I did see a lot of that, a little bit of that. I hadn't even thought about Caballero in a couple of years. So.
Well, he's kind of fell off, needless to say. But I was just going to ask, what did you think about Estrella? Did you have any strong feeling about him? Because he actually seemed to be getting some good cheering and some good, you know, hype behind him on the broadcast anyway.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of him prior to that fight. But, I, you know, to be honest, like, I probably didn't really see enough of it to really kind of really, you know, form a great opinion. You know, knocking down Caballero so many times and kind of beating him up that way, it wasn't really surprising for me. I thought that Caballero was pretty faded, and I hadn't really, like, refreshed on his resume recently to see what he had done. But obviously he was a good fighter. I just think that was years ago, so it's tough to put too much stock in it. You know, and like I said, it was kind of in the background. I didn't really sit down to focus until the main event came on.
Yeah, it's another case, kind of like Arce with Caballero, where he's not young. He's kind of weird in the first place as far as his style goes. And I mean, to a lot of people, not super watchable because of how awkward his style is. But I mean, the awkwardness in his style kind of just made for an awkward fight, especially with Estrella. Like, he was kind of like muscle manning his way through the fight and stuff like that, and trying to, you know, out physical Caballero, who looks like a scarecrow. So, I mean, he was very easily pushing the dude around, and, you know, Caballero was going down here and there and fucking everywhere just because he couldn't keep his balance anymore. So, you know, and now I read yesterday that Caballero is, like, you know, questioning what he's got left in boxing, as he should be. So, you know, it was just, it was nice to kind of get eyes on a new kid that's kind of coming up and whatnot. But in any event, it was entertaining or whatever, just not super duper high quality. That was the Mexican card this week.
You don't have such a name to put on the resume and something, you know, that you, next time the guy fights, you know, who's that guy? You know, remember he beat up Caballero? I mean, it's a little foot in the door of kind of getting close to some kind of, you know, mainstream interest, or from the, you know, boxing fans, I guess. Not anywhere close to mainstream, so there's maybe like three boxers in the world who have mainstream interest, but, you know.
And of course, our dude Brian Campbell just called Celestino Caballero Litzau sloppy seconds, and that's unfortunately true.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. How long ago was that? 4 years ago? 5 years ago?
Shit, yeah, that was like a couple years ago, dude. I mean, the guy has been really inactive. Like, he's fought, I think I tallied it, and he's fought 10 times in the last, like, 8 years or some shink. There's some shit. I don't even know. But I mean, yeah, that's kind of the story, is that, like, we barely even know who the dude is anymore. It's like when, what's his name, Sergio Thompson stepped up and beat Linares a couple of years ago.
Oh,
and
yeah,
then Sergio Thompson kind of got a little name off that. He's kind of been semi-comfortably enjoying fighting here regionally in Mexico because of it, and has a little bit of a cheering section. But anyway, as far as Estrella goes, yeah, we'll have to see. But kind of nice to just get a new name anyway. Shit, speaking of names, Showtime, huge card. Shit was monster. I couldn't even breathe, you know, when it was coming on. I was getting heart palpitations, you name it, dude. Roncis Barthelemy. Yeah, Fernando Saucedo. The Fernando Saucedo. So it was big. yeah, I was sexually aroused. Tell me about it, Foley.
And, you know, I had some interest in the card, I guess, just to see kind of like how Chad Dawson looked. And I wish I would have piped up a little bit more about this, but I'm not going to claim that I, like, was really picking the Carpentry upset. But I did think, you know, having seen Carpentry basically slap Fanfara around the ring for, like, 6 or 7 rounds, and, I was at that Fanfara-Carpentry fight, and I thought Carpentry might have been up, like, 6-1 in rounds. Carpentry was knocked down twice in the first round, came back and just was beating Fanfara around the ring.
Yeah.
And eventually, it was crazy. He basically just, like, turned his back and said that, like, his, like, shoulder was broken or something. Yeah, his shoulder was, like, and so the fight was stopped and Fanfara won on a TKO.
Slight correction, but he turned around and said his doctor said he needed a bacchiotomy.
Yeah, that's true. That was actually what it was.
Sorry.
No, so, you know, Carpentry had fought cleverly and lost the 12-round decision. I just didn't think Carpentry was, like, a total scrub. And the big question, though, was, like, how much did Dawson really have left, you know? And,
yeah.
And was Dawson's chin ever going to be the same? You know, is he going to always be kind of vulnerable? We'd seen him in that one comeback fight against a really overmatched opponent where he knocked the guy out in the first round, I think. But, you know, since the Stevenson, since Andre Ward, and it just seems like Dawson's, and obviously now after the Carpentry fight, it's just pretty clear that Dawson's on the kind of the downside of his career, you know. And I don't think I really have a lot of doubts about his chances of ever getting back onto like a world level, you know, in terms of being able to anyone even wanting to see him in the ring in a rematch against Adonis Stevenson. And it's, you know, in some ways, I mean, I know most people probably don't have any love for Dawson anyway, just because he's not really an exciting kind of fighter. But I'm a little slightly sympathetic to him because I just think it's more and more obvious. Now, who knows what would have happened, but I think going down to 68 to fight Andre Ward was obviously a pretty bad move as far as his career. I mean, maybe he made, you know, a decent enough payday in that fight, but I think that obviously, you know, the guy just wasn't the same in the ring that night. He hasn't been the same since then. And, you know, huge win for your boy Tommy Carpentry.
Yeah, Tommy Carpentry. Good kid.
Stunned that he got that decision, because I thought Dawson might have actually, like, narrowly won on scorecards, but, I mean, it was clearly a close fight, and, you know, so that had some interest for me, I guess, just because, you know, Dawson legitimately at one point in time, you know, was a real top-level fighter and kind of considered one of the most talented young guys, and it's just kind of another career that, well, he did some stuff. I don't know if it panned out the way he wanted it to, but, you know.
Well, it was in a way kind of nice to see a decision that was close and maybe, I don't know, I don't want to say undeserved for Carpentry, but a decision just that was close and probably would not have gone that way in most scenarios go his way. But, you know, wouldn't have gotten a chance without our dude Rances Barthelemy headlining the card, headlining against Fernando Saucedo. What do you think about that headliner?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't really think much of it because I just didn't think Saucedo was, I'd never heard of him, didn't think he was good, didn't even bother really looking up his resume, and felt like Barthelemy was more talented, but yet, you know, not really that exciting. So basically went exactly, you know, why I wasn't interested in the first place was kind of exactly why how it played out.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Barthelemy is a good fighter. I'd like to see him in there against, you know, better fighters. It's not, you know.
Well, I mean, we had seen, at least against Argenis Mendez, you know, at least the first time anyway.
Yeah. Great power.
Well, I mean,
fight.
Even if it was a late shot and the call was kind of whatever, you know, fucked up. But even so, it was kind of just like, all right, well, it didn't really look like a horrible, egregious foul. I'm not really going to hold it against the guy or anything like that. It wasn't like that. But, you know, he showed some promise right there in that first Mendez fight. And then the second fight, it obviously didn't, you know, wind up ending nearly as good. Regardless, yeah, I just kind of expected something here. I expected a little bit more of a showing, a little bit more of a desire to take the guy out and look good in a Showtime main event. I mean, the bottom line is it really shouldn't have been a main event in the first place. I don't know, like, why? Apart from Rancis Bartholomew being an Al Heyman guy, why? Well, just skip that shit. Don't even put that on.
Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, Bartholomew is a good fighter at 130 pounds, you know, and there'd be some matchups that would be interesting for him. But to see him as like an A-side again, you know, as a big favorite, doesn't make any sense against basically like a mid-30s, you know, journeyman. Or how old is Saucedo? But it just didn't make it made no sense, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, Ben Dawson headlining would have almost been more credible.
Well, and that's initially when I had read the news about Chad Dawson facing Tommy Garvincy on Showtime, I was kind of like, I don't know, I just saw the blurb and thought that was what was going to be the headliner. And I was like, well, I guess I can kind of see it because they're reaching and hoping that Chad Dawson will be the same dude that he was. But it still didn't really make much sense. And then at least when
even Vanus and Willie Nelson would have been a better headliner just because in the sense that it's just more evenly matched, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, without question. And that was
like
one
Rancis,
of
the... the bigger star than Vanus or Willie Nelson, to be honest.
Well, and what's his name? Steven Espinoza was, you know, defending the card. Well, it didn't really see, he words things very carefully, and he seems like a pretty sharp dude, but he wasn't so much defending the card itself as he was defending the matchups as being even matchups, you know, matchups where guys of two similar levels were, you know, taken on each other. And in some respects, I'm not going to disagree with that. It just wasn't a good card, though. That's the whole thing. That has been the whole thing with these, especially Showtime cards, is that the card overall isn't good. However, you brought it up, so we'll move on to that. Vanus Martirosyan wound up taking a pretty close decision against Willie Nelson, too. So that was an unexpectedly good fight. I was at least happy about that. I'm not a real big Vanus fan, but he kind of started-ish to win me over. Kind of. Not totally. But that was better than usual.
Right. I never really hated the guy like a lot of people did. But, yeah, it was a good fight. You know, definitely. Between two guys who really needed to kind of win to get, you know, some credibility maybe to be an opponent for one of the better guys at 154. Although, again, did this have some title belt on it too? Or not a real world title? Well, whatever. You know, that's basically to
know.
Me, like, that's the ceiling.
No, actually,
for me,
I'm sorry, I do know, because I looked it up before the show. It's like the fucking WBO Intercontinental Youth East Asia, you know, Southern Nebraska title. But it was basically, I think, some type of setup or appetizer to challenge Demetrius Andrade at some point, because he holds the WBO title, and then a lot of the times these kind of like fringe regional belts are setups for, you know, or mandatories or whatever for those type of belts. But I mean, I don't know. It doesn't matter.
So we might get that much anticipated Andrade Martirosyan rematch.
Yeah, no shit. And that's I guess the idea. But, I mean, so based on what you saw against Willie Nelson, though, do you think that Vanus Martirosyan steps up into that slot and does any better or, you know, comes out on top?
No, because, you know, every time I've seen Willie Nelson, I mean, that's kind of like what he's done is seems like he just will be winning a fight and then kind of like needlessly puts himself in I saw him one other fight where he got kind of hurt like that too, and I'm trying to figure out what it was, but I think it was that Arroyo fight that maybe that was on Showbox like back in the a couple years ago, and you know, same kind of thing, like Nelson would win like half the rounds, but then the other half of the rounds he got knocked down like three times, and it was kind of the same type of thing. And I just think Andre is a much better fighter, you know, and a better boxer. And I don't really see Marta Rosen having much more success, but I think that he'll probably have more of a positive, you know, people will be rooting for him, and maybe he's shown that he's, you know, he put Andre down in the first round too, didn't he? So, I mean,
I think he caught him like kind of by surprise there, but then after that totally like eased up.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really think of him as anything more than just a guy who's an opponent type of fighter for those guys. You know, Andrade, we saw him fight Lara. I thought Lara took over that fight and probably should have won, you know, even with, you know, six rounds or however many before that, you know, went to a technical decision. I don't think he beats any of those guys, and I just don't think he ever will. But, you know, it doesn't mean that he's, like, worthless. I mean, I think he's a good gatekeeper because Willie Nelson had an opportunity to maybe advance himself, and, you know, Marta Rosen said, you know, refuted that. So there's definitely a place for the guy. I don't really have that much interest in the rematch with Andrade or expect it to go differently. I mean, do you?
No. I mean, the big problem is, you know, and I'm going to try to refrain from, like, you know, trash-talking Vonis Martirosyan, but the big problem is that when he does step up, he has shown already that I don't know what the reason is, but he'll either, you know, kind of halfway rise to the occasion and then just stop or just not get going altogether. I mean, we've already seen that. I thought that Kasim Uma beat him in, I don't even know what that was. It was like 2008 or 2009 or something. That was back when Vonis was supposed to be like just coming into like contendership or whatever. And it was like, in my opinion, a huge failure. I thought that Kasim Uma beat him outright, but Vonis wound up getting the decision. So, you know, from that point, I was kind of like, you know, Kasim Uma's already pretty well faded at this point. So if he can't beat Kasim Uma, and I know that that's not totally great logic to have in boxing because it doesn't 100% always work that way. But regardless, that was just kind of how I felt moving forward. Although I think he's kind of confirmed that against a couple other different fighters. You know, he kind of fights up or down to the level of opposition a lot of the time. And, you know, usually just can't sustain anything. So, you know, if Willie Nelson had a better chin or better legs or whatever it is that would increase his punch resistance, I'm pretty sure he would have won that fight.
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of stretches that made you think that, you know, could he have continued what he was doing, he would have won that fight. But, you know, eventually it's kind of like he's just not that good, you know, at least not right now.
Yeah, and I don't really – and I think even when you're looking at that full junior middleweight scope, even Demetrius Andrade, and, you know, this is once again the belt thing, despite the belt, I don't dislike Andrade by any means, but he's not the kind of cream of the crop in that division, we don't think. I think he's still kind of on the second tier thus far. I don't think he's proved to be quite in that, like, you know, couple guy mix at the top. Could he be? He probably could be, but we haven't seen it yet. So, I think then
fight Lara or somebody like that. I think him and Lara would be a great fight just to see where he's at, you know.
It wouldn't necessarily
be a good real action fight, but
there's no question. And I don't mean to say like he doesn't deserve it or anything like that. I would like to see that fight because I think that, or something like that, a fight like that, because I think that's basically where he needs to go from now to prove whether or not he's an actual contender and everything, or an actual, whatever, champion, who gives a shit. But yeah, that's the only way he's going to get there, is to fight somebody on that level of like a Lara or somebody like that who's faced much better opposition than he has. So, in any event, kind of traveling down the line there to Vonis has already shown that he's not on that level even. So, yeah, I just think it's unlikely that he's able to move up once again in class and be successful. But it was a good fight. Keeping the positive, James.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to look at, like, kind of like who's coming up. But let's just, like, hypothetically, you know, let's say Keith Thurman was moving up to 154. A guy like Vonis would be a good fight for him. You know, obviously, I'd pick Thurman. But you know what I'm saying? Like, he winning a fight like this against Willie Nelson, I think it's put him in a position where he'll be desirable as an opponent on, you know, on one of the networks.
Yeah, for sure. And he's not, and a guy like Vonis Martirosyan is not devoid of a name, too. So he's probably going to wind up getting shots. I'm sure he will. And, well, he won, so of course he will. But in any event, yeah. Yeah, Vonis Martirosyan.
That's the whole thing. It's like, these days, you know, Andre Berto is still getting fights, you know, getting fights on networks where he's a huge favorite. You know, and so, like, what's probably going to happen is Vonis is going to be, like, an A-side on, like, a show, on, like, an HBO undercard fighting against somebody beneath him. You know, not even an up-and-comer, but, like, fighting against... And that's kind of the direction that boxing has gone this year. You know, where anybody who's, like, potentially has any... I mean, they're giving TV dates. They're just not... They're not 50-50 fights, and the A-sides aren't even, like, that good.
Yeah. Well, it's just continuing this trend of treating guys who are, you know, maybe they are special fighters, maybe they aren't, but most of them haven't totally proved it yet. They're still getting treated as though they're superstars because they're getting these kind of showcase type of bouts, even though they are not really at that point yet. They haven't made it there. Why are they getting showcases? Why are they getting, you know, opportunities that are basically like, stay busy fights when they're not even fucking staying busy? It doesn't really make any sense. And the you know, Canelo Clotty thing was kind of an example of that, although not a great example because you cannot really knock Canelo's opposition over the last few years. Just that fight, though, was like, why are we doing this? So luckily it got canceled, but that for me was like a prime example of a fight where like, we don't need this fight. This is, we don't need this. We don't need a setup to Danny Garcia versus Lamont Peterson. We don't need a setup to Lucas Matisse versus Adrian Broner. Just go right fucking to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
But, you know, I'm thinking ahead that, like, you know, that Nonito Denere, Nicholas Walter, I mean, that's an awesome fight for an undercard. So maybe, you know, maybe HBO's, I mean, HBO's schedule coming up actually looks pretty solid, so. And I think they have enough pieces now that they, you know, they can make some good stuff because, I mean, think about it. If this was Showtime, who would Donaire be fighting? You know, if he was one of the Golden Boy HBO,
not Walters.
I mean, the Golden Boy, like the Heyman crew, you know, I mean, he'd be put Donaire in against like a comparable opponent with like Danny Salka or Rob Salka.
I feel bad for Vetyeka, you know, the dude that Nonito took the belt from, but.
Yeah,
I mean,
at the end of the day,
it's tough for me to complain because what we're getting, you know, as a result is, in my opinion and in the opinion of most, a pretty damn good matchup.
Yeah, I think it's a great matchup. It's kind of being overlooked in a way, but that's really one of the best fights on paper that we've had. I mean, people have dismissed Donaire because of the Rigondeau fight and question, you know, his commitment, and he didn't look great against, what's his name, and Garchinian, and you know, when they had the rematch and all that, but you know, we're only a year or two removed from Donaire being thought of as one of the best fighters in the world. So it just shows one fight, the guy who everyone also now has gone so far to say, you know, Rigondeaux, I've seen him ranked number 2 or 3 pound for pound, which I mean, I disagree with it. Not that he's not, doesn't have the skills, but I think your resume has to count for something, and you know, he has really one notable win. I mean, I guess maybe Ekpeko too, but, you know, so whatever. But you know what I mean? It's like we everyone says Rigondeaux is this master boxer and one of the greatest fighters in the world, but then Donaire is, like, off the radar, and that was really his only loss.
Yeah.
And don't forget to, you know, put him down in that fight too towards the end.
People have short memory spans.
Well, he's taking a really tough fight now, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. I mean, it was one of those things when it was announced and rumored, I had a hard time believing it. I just didn't think Donaire, you know, Walters looks so dangerous and has all this confidence and coming off a huge knockout. You know, it's like, it's exactly the type of fight we want guys like Donaire to take.
Totally.
So since we never get that, you know, I just couldn't even believe it was true until it happened.
Dude, you know, before we move on real quick, if you don't mind, I just wanted to say I totally forgot to bring this up in regards to the Martirosyan Willie Nelson fight. But, you know, I'm not going to lie, dude. I got a little misty-eyed there at the end after the fight when they were interviewing Vonis because, you know, first of all, thoughts, and I don't mean this, you know, with any type of sarcasm or jokiness or anything, but seriously, thoughts with the Goosen family because, you know, that I had absolutely no fucking clue whatsoever that Dan Goosen was sick. I had no idea anything was going on, and I woke up the other day, and they announced Dan Goosen had died, and I was like, whoa, 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 what? Who? It was pretty crazy. And so to see Vonis Martirosyan kind of like finally put it together in a way, you know, in that effort, and then after the fight just like couldn't even contain it, it was good stuff. It was good stuff.
Yeah.
It was kind of rough.
Yeah, definitely. Well, who doesn't love the Goosens, you know, just as a fan, like watching on TV?
It's, you know, I mean, does anybody really
shocking,
like...
Right?
Yeah, who, like, what do they do that is bad? I don't know. It, you know, Dan seemed, I never met him or really spoke with him, but I don't think I've ever heard a bad story about him. Joe, I mean, fuck, dude, Joe could murder somebody, and look at the way he dresses. I don't care if he murders anybody. I love his wardrobe.
The shirt from Corrales Castillo is like, that dude can do whatever he wants the rest of his life.
I was hoping that when he said, you better fucking get inside on him now, he was talking to me in reference to himself, because I was just turned on at that point. So, you know, it was...
Well,
no,
it's another amazing
you know,
thing
they're
from...
kind of...
Yeah.
It was just a real bummer.
You watch that fight with somebody who's like not doesn't really watch boxing and hasn't seen a lot of fights. And for one thing, it's like the most barbaric, fucking, you know, just brutal spectacle. And then this dude in the corner is wearing like, you know, that.
Yeah. He's stuck. He's stuck in 1977, and I love him for it. So, anyway, as far as, you know, that portion of it goes, I didn't want to forget that because that, you know, Dan Goosen, the Goosen family, they're a pretty significant part of boxing. So, anyway, yeah, enough of bringing everybody down, I guess. But let's go ahead and move on to Greener Pastures, Jermaine Taylor versus Sam Solomon for a belt, an actual belt that people have referred to as a championship before. On ESPN. Oh, wait, no, dude, no. Actually, no, I totally forgot. We still have Curtis Stevens versus Hassan and Dom to talk about, bro. If you don't mind.
All right. If you must. Bear in mind, I don't think any of the fighters we've even talked about are actual, like, legitimate champions.
Yeah.
Not that that matters, but you know what I mean? Like, if it was just... We've mentioned every fight's been for some kind of a title,
yeah,
belt, whatever, but no actual
it's,
real champion.
It's tiresome, dude. It's really tiresome to even just get into, like, explaining it, and, like, sometimes I think about it, and I'm like, I wonder if somebody who's, you know, new to boxing or doesn't really watch a lot is listening right now. First of all, they probably really aren't. They're not going to be listening to a boxing fucking podcast if they don't like boxing. Well, even for us, we're like, does he have a belt? I don't think he's got that belt. Nobody, we don't know. And we fucking follow boxing pretty closely.
Exactly.
It's kind of ridiculous. But in any event, you know, Curtis Stevens versus Hassan and Dom, I was looking forward to it. You were probably looking forward to it. A lot of people were, especially because of the downtime and whatnot. But, you know, just going into it, that was the type of fight where it was like, hey, this looks like a competitive matchup on paper. You know, Curtis Stevens has got some punching power. Neither of them are big names, but they're big enough names that for an ESPN-level fight, that it was a significant fight, especially. So it was kind of nice to, you know. Go ahead.
It was a good fight, but no, I mean, I don't view it that differently than Vanus against Willie Nelson. Just in the sense that, like, it was a good fight among two guys kind of on the fringe of the top 10. But, you know, anybody saying that Ndom could outbox Golovkin, I think, are out of their minds. You know, I mean, this was to me more about the limitation of Curtis Stevens.
He's got that footwork, though.
Yeah, I mean, he's a competent boxer who can take a punch, and he can, you know, good at moving around the ring and resilient. We saw that with, you know, Pierre Quillen. But I think, you know, it was I was rooting for Stevens, man. I really wanted to, I don't know, I've been trying to get on that bandwagon for a while. It's just, I don't really think it's heading anywhere like that great.
Well, you know, kind of like how you said with the Willie Nelson, or I'm sorry, no, the Tommy Carpency versus Chad Dawson fight. I mean, I'm not going to start calling out names or anything like that for picking that correctly or whatever. But, yeah, I just kind of, after seeing Curtis Stevens, I mean, a handful of years ago on Max Boxing, I remember that they were kind of trying to push Curtis Stevens and, what was his name, Jadon Codrington. They're both out of New York, and they called themselves the Chin Checkers. They both had some significant amateur experience. They fought on the same cards. I'm pretty sure that they were buddies and whatnot. And then Jadon Codrington wound up getting leveled by Alan Green real quick and, like, super fucking brutally. I don't know if you remember that, but it was horrible. And then on top of that, Jadon Codrington wound up getting, like, trampled by his own team members who were freaked out because he got knocked out. It was terrible. But that kind of ended the idea of them as the whole team thing. And then Curtis Stevens went to the Contender, that kind of second wave of Contender that I just absolutely didn't watch any second of at all. And I was at that point, I was kind of just like, dude, if he's on the Contender, no offense to anybody who's behind that show, but people seem to know that most of the guys on that show were not world class. And that was kind of the clue into me where I was like, you know, maybe he can fight a little bit and he's got some power, but he's struggling here against dudes who are like kind of third tier. So at that point and moving forward, even going into the Golovkin fight, I was like, all right, he's got power, but Gennady Golovkin needs to like end this fight and shit because I don't think this dude is on his level. And he wound up doing it. But also, Curtis Stevens kind of raised his own profile a little bit in that fight and in a couple other recent fights too, because, you know, even me, I was like, nah, he's going to fucking get leveled against Golovkin. But, you know, he got brutalized and then got up to fight on. And so he kind of raised his profile a little bit.
It's courage, you know, and this happens a lot of times where a guy exceeds expectations or, you know, gets hurt really badly and gets up and fights on and fights his ass off and still gets knocked out. I mean, it doesn't change the end result that Stevens is obviously a level beneath Golovkin. I mean, we saw that in that fight, you know. Now I think it's obvious he's also probably a notch below a guy like Endom, you know. That's not to say that he's not likable and he can't have a following and be in some interesting fights. And, I mean, I think the power is real, but, you know, I also saw him hit Golovkin with some huge shots and Golovkin wasn't affected as much by it, which I think is a combination of the fact that Golovkin has better defense and he probably, you know, absorbed some of it with movement. But
totally.
He hit Golovkin with one or two pretty clean punches and Golovkin barely moved. So I don't know, man, you know, a lot of his huge, you know, highlight reel knockouts were against guys who've been knocked out before. It wasn't like terribly surprising. So I've always kind of felt like I did want to jump on board because I was a big fan of sending the picture of Golovkin in a coffin thing that he did before the Golovkin fight.
It was stupid because he wound up losing, but no, that was a pretty good, I have to admit, that was pretty solid trash talk.
Yeah, that was pretty kind of fucked up, but kind of
awesome too. It kind of was, but at the same time, I was like, damn, he ain't kidding with the trash talk.
He's a compelling dude, you know, he's got like a really like intense kind of, you know, and he's very like short with his sentences and everything. So I was, you know, I was pulling for him in the pre-fight interviews. I'm not going to root for the French guy. Come on.
Well, and I mean, you know, forgive me, all of my super homophobic listeners here, but he's a good-looking dude too. My wife, when we were watching the fight, she's like, "Oh, who's that?"
Curtis Stevens.
Like what? Yeah.
Wow, that's a new one.
My wife's mom was just like, "Oh yeah, he's cute," and I was like, "Well, apparently, well, maybe he's just a good-looking dude in my household." Because I agreed. But Jesus Christ, you know, he does have appeal. He does have an interesting story.
Male model.
You know, Well, you know, he fights in a, okay, I'm just really attracted to him, but yeah,
I'll take this pause-worthy conversation one step further. John David Jackson, that's a good-looking man.
Yes.
Am I wrong?
What?
All right. let's move on.
Oh, well, I would have gone with, no, I'm not even bringing up that name. I'm not even giving the fucking satisfaction. So I was a little bit surprised by Stevens struggling like that myself. I mean, but let me put it a different way. I wasn't so much surprised with Stevens struggling or losing. I was surprised with him kind of seeming to throw in the towel. You know, it just, as far as effort, it was one of those things where it was another one of those type of outings from a fighter where they talked big. They said they were going to do X, Y, and Z. They were going to do this, that, and this. I mean, and it's not like any fighter ever goes into a fight going, yeah, I'm probably going to go in there and shit the bed. Of course, but regardless, you know, he talked real big and said he was going to do all these things. And then, you know, the next thing you know, he really gave a non-effort in a whole bunch of rounds. And then, of course, in like the last 15 seconds of the fight, he went apeshit and almost knocked Hasan Hittam out. Like, he caught him with a couple punches, and I'm like, bro, why'd you fucking wait until the last 10 seconds for this? You know, like, if you have the energy to do this now, you could have done this times five a couple rounds ago. So it was just disappointing to, you know, I expected more. Because even though I was talking him down a second ago about the class and all that type of shit, I did expect more. It's not like Hasan and Dom is the pinnacle of fighting or anything like that. And so, yeah. And we saw him down so many times against Peter Quill, and I figured that was what was going to happen at some point. But, you know, I thought that Stevens was going to be able to clip him hard and keep him down. But, you know, it was wrong. Bit of a bummer.
Yeah, I don't know. Guys like Endom, it just kind of annoys me, the phenomenon, because you always fought in Europe. So, of course, like, the real hardcore fans had seen a couple of his fights on streams and things like that. So he did become kind of a real darling of a lot of people saying, you know, and I had really only seen him just as a name on, like, the middleweight rankings and seeing him, you know, he's an undefeated guy. I think I saw one fight maybe prior to him fighting Quillen. But, you know, it's like fighters like that get them so embraced by the kind of extreme hardcore American fans because they've seen them, so you know, before they kind of make their real American TV debut. And so I just thought a lot of the rhetoric with that Quillen fight kind of bugged me, that a lot of people were like, you know, yeah, saw an end down, like, boxed Quillen's ears off. And it's like, oh, well, aside from the seven times he got knocked down, you know, yeah, or whatever it was. I mean,
yeah,
he won some rounds against Quillen, maybe four rounds, maybe five rounds. But, you know, he was on the canvas like half the fight.
Yeah, and it got to the point where just, like, numerically, mathematically, he could not win the fight. That's really,
it's just that after this, a lot of people were saying, oh, he'd be a great opponent for Golovkin. Well, I mean, I don't really think so. I don't need to see Golovkin fight somebody that Quillen knocked down six times. You know, I mean, stylistically, yeah, he's a boxer, but there's other boxers, too. I mean, I'd rather see Soleiman fight Golovkin, segueing into tomorrow night. You know, I mean, if we're going to see Golovkin against middleweights, I mean, yeah, I guess Endom's name's going to come up in the rotation. But, you know, beating Stevens doesn't vault Endom into, like, the number one or two contender just because he boxed really well, you know, against a guy who's basically kind of a stretch to even be considered a top 10 middleweight. You know, I mean, when did Stevens move into the top 10 of middleweight? When he lost to Golovkin?
I totally cut out there, actually, for a minute, but I called in, like, super quick, so I missed, like, probably a sentence and a half.
Well, I'm just saying that, like, I don't really, you know, where does Endom go from here? I mean, I think there's other fights. I don't think he should jump right into a Golovkin shot or anything like that, nor do I think he would trouble Golovkin. So I was basically just saying that, like,
totally.
You know, I'd rather see Soleiman fight Golovkin, assuming that he gets past Taylor tomorrow night. And I was kind of looking for you to jump in with, like, an awesome segue.
Fucking, well, you just segged it, dude. You segged the
shit. Well, maybe
shit
go
out
with, don't mention when he shot his cousin.
We can't not mention these things. We cannot not mention Jermaine Taylor's epic Instagram feed where he says he's not going to lose to another white boy, where he says, fuck you, God bless you, like right back to back in like the same sentence. We can't not get into him walking down the street and firing a gun in the air. I mean, seriously, if you have not seen, dude, if you have not seen people, if you have not seen Jermaine Taylor's Instagram feed, go find him. He is insane, and this is what happens when people have brain bleeds and then continue fighting and, like, you know, take shots and get knocked down by Caleb Truax. Love you, buddy. You're hilarious, you know, but you're not totally world-class, in my opinion. Could be in the future. Sorry, I'm probably going to get my ass kicked at some point. But regardless, dude, there's something wrong with Jermaine Taylor, and the fact that he's even being licensed to fight is scary. The fact that ESPN is actually televising this is kind of disappointing.
Well,
I'm
going to
watch
it. Is like,
I can't be wrong, but
well,
it's...
We're all going to watch it. There's definitely a chance of something crazy and ridiculous and dark and disturbing happening. And for that reason, of course, we're not going to want to miss it. But, you know, it's not about the... it's not even the fact that, like, oh, we got knocked down by Caleb Truax, you know, like... And we don't really think of Truax as like an elite world class fighter, of course, right? But it's not that. You know,
he's not getting knocked down.
It was more like the post fight interview where he just you know, couldn't control his emotions.
That was a big chunk of what I was saying. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, so and it was sad because Taylor was always a real gentleman, you know, in his prime. I mean, he didn't cultivate really any kind of like negative image. He was kind of like marketed as a good guy, you know, and, you know, he had the run on HBO, obviously, but I think a lot of things changed when he started to get knocked out. Obviously, Kelly Pavlik first, and the Carl Froch fight, and Arthur Abraham, and, you know, it's just the fact that it tomorrow, you know, 2014, he's going to be fighting on, you know, a pretty significant platform on ESPN for one of these world titles. It's just it's ludicrous, man.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'll be watching because there's not much other boxing on, but also because, yes, there's that train wreck factor because, I mean, dude, and actually, apart from that, though, I actually am kind of legitimately concerned for Jermaine Taylor, especially in this type of fight. And, I mean, speaking to the matchup itself, you know, I think that one of the best things that can happen to Jermaine Taylor in a fight, like, you know, put anybody else in front of him, and one of the best things that could possibly happen to him in a fight is him getting one-shotted in the first round, taken out, totally out. Because at least that way it would end quickly, he wouldn't take a whole bunch of punishment, and at least that way it would be like so hopefully devastating that he would just walk away. But Sam Soleiman does not have a lot of punching power. He throws a ton of punches, he's awkward, he smacks a grip, you know, he's kind of rough on the inside, et cetera, et cetera. So I envision this not ending well for Jermaine Taylor at all. I mean, fuck, I don't see how it can. If he wins, it doesn't end well for him.
I just don't see, you know, he might have some little of a hand speed left, but I just don't see that he has the same reflexes. And you saw that in the Truax fight. And against the guy who's kind of worked himself up like Soleiman, who's been fighting for a long time too, you know, so it's not like he's fighting like a real young, you know, big punching guy who's going to kill him in the ring. But like you said, I mean, where Soleiman's been fighting now at a real pretty high level, it's the most likely outcome tomorrow is going to be that kind of 12-round methodical beating, you know, where Taylor ends up taking, you know, a couple hundred punches and they're not, you know, nothing hard, but just his going to be getting his brain rattled all night. And, you know, who knows? I mean, it's boxing, anything can happen, but it's one of those fights where if things go the way we expect them to, you know, no good is going to come from this. Kind of the same deal with, on a totally polar opposite, it's the same thing with Garcia Salca. It's like the expectation, Garcia is going to knock him out in two or three rounds, Salca doesn't belong in the ring, that's exactly what happened. And, you know, what good did that do anybody aside from those guys who got paid a significant amount of money, you know? For the fight. I mean, that's all this is, you know. Taylor and Soleiman are getting good purses for it, and, you know, they'll benefit, but I don't think we need to really see it. And like you said, I mean, that's like probably the best case scenario. I mean, this is the type of fight that, you know, someday we could be pointing to is where something really, really bad happened with Jermaine Taylor. And enough of that's been going on already outside of the ring from what everything that we've heard. So, I'm not hoping for some kind of horrible catastrophe to happen or anything like that. That's not why I'm watching it. It's just that, you know, I guess like it's kind of like the extreme good and bad of the sport. And, you know, if you follow boxing, you kind of want to see what it's capable of. And this definitely has potential of being something that could, you know, we're not going to be, I doubt anyone's coming away from tomorrow night saying, what a great fight. I mean, and there's potential that Jermaine Taylor, you know, something crazy happens and Taylor knocks Soleiman out. But, you know, and that would definitely be a spectacle to watch and to see the reaction to it. You know, so it's just one of those things that's going to be polarizing and there's going to be a lot of people talking and commenting about it. And if you're a boxing fan, it's totally understandable. You'll want to watch it. But as far as, like, relevance and competitiveness, you know, it has none of that.
Yeah, exactly. It has a potential instant gratification factor where maybe we get something that within this bubble is good. You know, maybe we get something that is entertaining. Maybe we get a crazy knockout, a highlight. What if somebody bites someone else's fucking crotch or some shit? I don't know, dude. You know, this is boxing. Anything can happen. But apart from that, there's really no larger meaning or, I mean, not that there has to always be, but down the road, this has the potential for just opening up a can of worms, dude. It just does. And I think that, our dude, Adam Abramowitz was, you know, bringing up that exact, he has been bringing up that exact issue a couple times recently where he's pretty much taking ESPN to task for televising this. And I can't argue with him. I think that they probably should have taken a bit of a more ethical stand on this about not televising it because it just has the potential for bad stuff and it's kind of rewarding a dude who fucking shot his cousin and is just acting a total fool.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, they're probably going to get a great rating for it, you know, and that's television networks in the business of. So at a certain point, you know, is it that bad ethically? I mean, boxing itself, you're watching guys punching each other in the head. You know, they've been medically cleared for whatever that means. So, you know, is it in kind of
certainly, but there are levels here too, you know.
I think the best ESPN can do is well, yeah, of course, you know, and this isn't good. But, you know, I mean, I think the best that ESPN can do is just to be honest about it during the broadcast, you know, not act like this is. I mean, imagine if this was on NBC Sports. You'd have Kenny Rice just, like, shrieking about the world championship and Jermaine Taylor back and blah, you know. I hope at least that, like, Teddy Atlas and Grisham aren't going to be muzzled into endorsing the product, you know, because every serious fan, anyone who knows the story of Jermaine Taylor, you kind of have to acknowledge that tragic potential that's occurring and all the problems he's had in this, you know. And I think in the preview last week they did mention it, or during the Curtis Stevens fight, they mentioned, you know, the shooting incident. So, I mean, as long as that's all addressed and put out on the table, I think that you can, you know, they're fine. I think the problem is if it's just kind of like, former world champion Jermaine Taylor making his comeback and there's no mention of the 7 years in between, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I think that luckily, and you know, man, a lot of people talk trash about Teddy and I get it, but luckily one of the things about Teddy that is good is that he's really difficult to restrain. He's difficult to muzzle. And, you know, I think that he's the type of guy that at the end of the day, he'd kind of be willing to, like, you know, take his lumps or, you know, face the consequences for speaking out. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. And that's one of the things I really like about him. He can be annoying and crazy, yes, but he does, in my opinion, speak for the good of the sport. And hopefully he does. I hope he does. I know Todd Grisham's a pretty funny dude, and he's a pretty I think he's also the type of guy who's pretty sharp as well, and I think that even if he is kind of, you know, handcuffed a bit, he'll find a way to, you know, slip in some jabs here and there, at least comically. But I hope they do, you know, I hope they just tell the truth. That's all.
Yeah, I think they should acknowledge at least that there's some uneasiness about the situation, and kind of explain why. But, you know, I guess at a certain point,
yeah.
I mean, that's boxing, you know, and you can't really tell
yeah.
the guy. I mean, I guess you could, but you start getting into a slippery slope when you start, you know, you know, the doctors, the official doctor has cleared him to fight, so you can't, you know, we can't say to Jermaine Taylor, no, you can't do that, you know. The man has
yeah,
free will. He used
that.
He used
that
a few weeks ago, actually, when her cousin was at his house. But, you know, he has Jermaine Taylor can create his own destiny, so he's choosing to do this, you know.
And on top of that, you know, there is always that angle that I'm not always, you know, I'm not always going to take this stance where, you know, when people say, oh, well, he's got the right to, like, make a living, he's got the right to earn money. That is true, though. You know, I guess if he's assuming the responsibility and he's saying, yes, I already know that I could, you know, get killed or whatever the case may be, then at the end of the day, I can't really tell a grown man, well, no, I don't want you to do that because I don't like it. But still, speaking to the kind of levels of morality here, I wish I weren't an addict. I wish I could just, like, be like, ah, fuck that, I'm not watching it. But I can't promise that I'll do that, and I probably will watch it.
I just can't fathom that you couldn't find a doctor that would look at this case and look at the situation and argue that Taylor shouldn't have the right to fight. So, I mean, I really do question, like, the licensing process, because we know very well, I mean, there's guys who are probably in worse shape than Jermaine Taylor who are getting knocked out all the time, you know, and are just become, like, you know, getting paid a couple hundred dollars a night to fight, like, or, you know, a couple hundred dollars for a fight, and fighting every, you know, once a month or something and just getting knocked out by prospects, like, around the country, you know, and guys who have suffered multiple concussions, you know, and maybe never even had the advanced type of treatment to find out if there was something more serious with them. So it's not like this is unique to Taylor. It's just that he's so such a high-profile fighter, and you know, the words brain bleed. I mean, you know, I can't look at that phrase and want to see that man, you know, in an athletic event where his brain is going to be getting, you know, punched. I mean, that's exactly
yeah.
what this is. So I question
yeah.
the medical, I question, like, who, how thorough of an evaluation and all that kind of stuff. And, I mean, if there's a doctor, if every, you know, the opinion of the entire medical community is that, you know, suffering multiple concussions and a brain bleed and exhibiting, like, all sorts of kind of erratic behavior that's not characteristic to how you used to act, at least, you know, in the public eye, you know, if all of that means that you're at no further risk than any other fighter to step in the ring and fight, then so be it. But I just can't believe that that's the case. I mean, because we've seen in
yeah,
the NFL guys who've had multiple concussions and then turned, you know, I don't want to make it all crazy, but, you know, there's stories about the NFL players who, like, the guy, I forget his name, but killed himself and had suffered a few horrible concussions. And supposedly
and
like
the report just came out this last week. Yeah, that shit just came out this last week. That, like, you know, they had been talking about him having head issues, like, you know, physiological head issues that, you know, could have potentially been overlooked. So, I mean, yeah, no, that's, yeah.
Well, they find that
I always
CTE is like they find that in the autopsy, which is basically like the condition after suffering, like, multiple, you know, brain damage.
Yeah. And these are difficult things to talk about, James Foley. You know, and this is the type of conversation that we have on the show where I think a lot of people start tuning out because it's a difficult conversation. It's a conversation that we don't have an answer to. Basically, what we're saying with these conversations and what we're asking in not so many words is, like, should we really be watching boxing, guys? Should we really be doing this?
No, I mean, I'm not trying to.
No. But, I mean, I think that just the larger issue here, like, when we start asking about, like, you know, these guys, when we start talking about how brutal it is and how these guys are getting, you know, hit in the head and, like, what the fuck are we doing watching this and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's just a kind of, it's a funky conversation to have that, you know, I think a lot of people just tune out because they don't want to go there.
Yeah, I mean, I respect that, but you know, I'm not saying that this whole sport needs to be eradicated, but I think that, like, you know, fighters who have suffered, like, multiple incidents and their risk is greatly increased because of it, and that's all I'm saying. But, like, we're not doctors, so we don't really know, and the thing is, we all know how boxing works. You know, boxing is such a fringe thing that it wouldn't be surprising at all how hard is it to get some local guy to just, you know, give a guy a clean bill of health, you know? It's like, knowing boxing, I am dubious that, you know, the highest medical standards are being kind of upheld for that, because you read about other sports and other cases, and it does seem that having multiple, you know, brain incidents does increase your risk of, you know, future incidents in your brain, and also leads to all sorts of, you know, crazy behavior. And it's all circumstantial with Jermaine Taylor. We don't know the whole story, but having that whole cloud over this, you know, that's the thing is, I will watch it, but, I mean, I totally respect anyone who wouldn't want to watch it, and I would never try to write an article or anything saying, you know, from kind of like an optimistic perspective of like, well, Taylor's been cleared, and he's looking sharp in his last fight, and so, you know, hey, like, this is boxing. Like, may the best man win. You know, I mean, I'm not looking forward to that. And if Taylor does win, what will that lead to? You know, I mean, so it's a tough conversation to have, and all we can really do is kind of go by what the official, you know, ruling of it is, and they had a doctor that Taylor to fight said he's no more at risk than, you know, a guy who's never been knocked out. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. It's, well, you know, bottom line is that I don't really accept any, like, doctor reports or anything like that if they're not from Dr. Victor Conti. So, I mean, you know, you can try to give me these amateurs. You can try to fucking, you know, give me these Flip Hamanskis and all these other people.
Or Dr. Ferdy Pacheco.
Yeah, Ferdy.
You'll take his word.
Yeah, no question. So, yeah, it's kind of like the whole, with stuff like this, the whole process just kind of like, you have, when you step back and look at how this is even happening, it's kind of like, I mean, Sam Solomon is 40 years old himself. When I looked, I was like, damn, Jermaine Taylor's 36? I mean, time goes by, and, you know, he took some years off and whatnot, but, you know, what is
that? Taylor also, forget all the knockouts and all that, Taylor's not the kind of fighter that, like, ages well. You know, he's kind of more of an athletic guy who used speed and, you know, that reach and that kind of stuff. And now it's like, he doesn't really have a boxing foundation to become like a great old fighter anyway. And so I think Solomon beats him, and this is all kind of a moot point. But,
yeah,
you know, God forbid that Taylor wins and somebody even tries to bring up Taylor and Golovkin. If that happens, I'll be begging for Endom to get the Golovkin fight.
We're the Golovkin there's a Golovkin would not end well by any stretch at all. It would be horrible. So, yeah, I mean, I'm just hoping that it does all end well for Jermaine Taylor, you know, overall, because he seemed, you know, to be a nice kid. And, you know, even just the look of him, yes, he's gotten older, but he looks just like a weathered-ass dude in, like, the Instagram videos and everything. He looks like a dude that's been put through the ringer. I know a guy who lives in Arkansas. Yeah, I know this is one of those things, but I do know a dude who lives in Arkansas and has lived there his entire life, sees Jermaine Taylor occasionally, like, around town, apparently, so this guy says, and says that Jermaine Taylor is heavy into cocaine. I have no idea if that's true or not, and I'm not going to go ahead and be like, he's into cocaine, but this is just what someone has told me.
Well, that seems like
that wouldn't surprise me because, yeah, totally reputable. Hey, dude, just as fucking reputable as Thomas Hauser. So, in any event, it's really...
That's a good point, yeah.
It wouldn't really surprise me, you know? It really wouldn't surprise me because he looks like he's been around the block a little bit.
Well, you know, we've all had our issues.
Well, yeah. I party,
you know? Bottom line, when the bell rings, I'm rooting for JT.
I mean, seriously, are you going to sit there and root for Solomon? give him more brain damage. Come on, I mean, I'm rooting for Taylor. I think it'd be awesome if Taylor won. But just, you know,
I don't know.
Not going to end well, whether tomorrow or the next time. But I'm predicting that I think Solomon's going to speed him up. He's just going to be a better boxer and sharper, and you know, we'll see. I mean, I think so much of Taylor's, you know, success early in his career, and you know, a lot of his decisions were like somewhat controversial because he was kind of one of those real athletic guys who throws a lot of combinations, but against savvier boxers, he's pretty ineffective and not really landing cleanly. You know, and as an older fighter, I mean, he hasn't done anything in the last. Since when? You know, I mean, beating what JC Candelo, that was his last fight. You know, it's an okay win until you realize that like a couple guys knocked him out right. You know, the two fights before Taylor, and quicker than Taylor did. I think one of those guys was what's his name? Oh, Fernando Guerrero. So you know, you're coming off like a seventh round knockout of a guy that Fernando Guerrero knocked out in two rounds. One fight before that, and you've got like the mainstream, you know, the biggest sports site in the world saying Jermaine Taylor looked sharp against, you know, savvy veteran JC Candelo, so bring on the title shot.
Well, and what kind of surprised me, like especially after that that Truax win in the interview, I mean, I had to, of course, go find that on YouTube because I remember at the time I was just like, whoa, what the fuck is going on? But, you know, I watched it again, and I'm sitting there watching it, and Pat Lynch? Fuck, his trainer.
Yeah,
shit.
I know you're talking about.
Yeah, I think it's Pat Lynch, but anyway, the kind of reddish-faced white dude with the gray hair. Anyway, he's been Jermaine Taylor's trainer pretty much forever. The point is, he was always the type of dude that seemed real, like, straight shooter-ish. And then after, I believe it was the Abraham knockout, he was like, yeah, Jermaine needs to retire. Like, that's it. And then all of a sudden, here we are a couple years after that, and he's just like, oh, yeah, no, it was just a lapse. You know, a total defensive lapse. You heard him. He put his hand down and got caught. It's fine. We'll work on it in the gym. And I'm like, huh? Damn, this dude's
Bella's. DeBella's saying the same, you know, basically done the same thing, done a complete 180 on it, and, you know, okay, if you want to give those guys the benefit of the doubt, maybe their hearts are in the right place, and they really believe Taylor's, you know, fully healthy, mentally, physically, and he can go out there and do this, you know, but at the same time, you know, these guys
know.
Are, they make money when Jermaine Taylor fights.
Yeah,
so,
more or less, you know.
And the thing about it is, I think this is a pretty good, isn't the payday for this, like, pretty high? What's the person
I think
for this? I don't want to say a number I thought it was a lot.
I don't know the number, but I think for an ESPN fight, the purses are like on the high side. I think they're on the high side for like an ESPN fight, which, you know, the budget for fights on ESPN in general is not very good. But, you know, also, and if I'm not mistaken, Jermaine Taylor was handled by Al Haymon, I believe. I don't know if he still is. But if he is, then that would explain why the whole, you know, the purse disparity or the difference in purse or whatever. But anyway, yeah, it's, I don't know.
This article here, the disclaimer from Dan Rayfield, it says he was tested by some of the world's top neurologists and given a clean bill of health, you know, licensed in Nevada, one of the stiffest jurisdictions in which to get a license. So...
whatever.
You know, take that for what it's worth, but I just have a really hard time seeing, you know, believing that there's not like another top neurologist, no one by name. Well, maybe you could find that if you dug deeper, but I just can't believe there's not a neurologist out there who would, you know, say differently.
Well, and
brain bleed, knocked out three times. It's just kind of like, really, that doesn't increase the chances that could happen again at all.
Well, and even if that were true, it's not consistent. It's not consistent with what the commissions have done in the past. I mean, an easy example is Joe Messi. A lot of people forgot about Joe Messi, dude. That dude was all over ESPN2 and shit in the early 2000s, you know, knocked the shit out of Vero Williamson on HBO when he finally got there, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, he wound up in the Vasily Yurov fight. you know, in those last couple of rounds, he took a serious ass-kicking that wound up actually giving him a brain bleed, and then he was unable to get licensed for a long-ass time and basically had to settle for fighting, you know, on, like, smaller cards and shit like that after years, you know, of legal wrangling. So, and, right. and that was basically their position, was that they weren't going to give him a license because he'd already, you know, had some significant head trauma and brain issue. So they can't even keep consistent on this thing, which is, that's just about as frustrating.
Well, dude, I wonder if and I'm going to bring up one of the great, great modern controversies, namely, was Margarito on the verge of turning the, you know, turning the tide in the Cotto rematch. But, you know, I wonder if this you know, all of the talk going into the fight is going to kind of affect the way that the, you know, ringside doctors and the referee and everything handles Jermaine Taylor. Kind of like, you know, with that, you know, Margarito Cotto, where it was the fight was in jeopardy and New York wasn't going to give him a license because of his eye. And there was so much attention given to that eye during that rematch, which eventually led to, of course, you know, the stoppage of the fight with Margarito protesting and seemingly able to continue despite his eye, you know, pretty clearly being in really, really bad shape. So much of that, I think, was because of the perception going into it and because New York didn't want to have, you know, the liability of approving, you know, giving him a license, you know, basically with his eye being a known issue and having that turn out to be really, you know, having Margarito get blinded or something like that. So here in this fight with, you know, the perception going in so great and so much has been written and said about Taylor's past and everyone knows about the brain, you know, suppose that Soliman is just kind of beating him up but not really doing any serious damage. You know, what do you think that could you see the referee or the doctor kind of jumping in and stopping it?
Yeah,
that would be really controversial if it wasn't for Taylor's background.
I don't think there's any question that that has the potential to influence it. Just like when fighters talk to the referees, you know, ahead of the fight, like in the dressing room, when they have their little talk, and you know, you don't really see it on lower level fights very often. But, you know, especially on pay-per-views where they're like following the fighter's every move until the main event. A lot of the times they'll go into the dressing room when the referee's there, and you'll see the trainer or someone else go, "Hey, man, he uses his elbows a lot. You got to be watching out for those elbows." And then sure enough, you see during the fight, for example, Kenny Bayless against, you know, with Marcos Maidana in that rematch. I mean, I'm not going to cry too much about it because I think Maidana probably would have lost anyway. However, I don't think there's any question that Floyd – and or people on his team were like, "He's super rough, you know, you got to be watching out for that rough stuff." And of course Kenny Bayless was on that shit like white on rice. It was horrible.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's any question that it could influence it.
I'm all about those like cutaways to the locker room during the pay-per-view events most of the time, because the undercards are so shitty anyway. But yeah, no, I'm all about like the referee's instructions and all that stuff. But yeah, I remember like one where Pacquiao just like, I don't remember what he asked, but it was like during that referee, you know, and it was something like, you know, "How many rounds in the fight?" Or just some really obvious question that like you would have thought he would know that going prior to it, you know. But yeah, those rare little pieces behind the scenes are classic, dude.
Well,
I hope for that. I'm hoping that there's like a glove controversy or some shit. Like the less of the undercard I can see, the better. You know, I was loving the Margarito Cotto rematch when they were like, wasn't there some behind the scenes stuff then with like Nazim Richardson like inspecting Margarito, you know, all that stuff, and Robert Garcia's fighting with
Cotto. What did he say?
Yeah,
Miguel Cotto, how he cries. He cries so much. Jesus, dude, that was like the best
thing about that
Margarito Cotto rematch.
It was one of the best villain performances. I mean, he just completely embraced like everything. He almost like never even denied that he had like used, you know, like doctored his hand wraps in the first fight and whatever. And
it was pretty bad. But I mean,
come on, dude.
Yeah, and his eye was just in a bad way, too. So, I mean, yeah, he could have been, you know, gaining some momentum and whatnot there, but I don't know if he's just kidding. No, but he could have, and I've heard other people say that. But now, especially now, if you look at Antonio Margarito, like if you see random pictures of him out about town and whatnot or at boxing events, dude, he's got like one of the lenses in the glasses that I've seen him wearing is like a fucking, it's a telescope and shit, because his eye is so fucked up from his career. So it's tough for me to really argue about that stoppage. The guy just, you know, he looks like he got put through the ringer.
May have been a cheater, but he was definitely a warrior.
Yeah, I mean, I can't take that away from him, although I'm admittedly super bitter about the whole hand wrap thing because I was a huge fan at the time and I just felt, like, betrayed and shit. But regardless, you know, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that pretty much sums up pretty fucking all of the boxing for, you know, the next week or so. Although, you know, the following week, we're going to be getting some Golovkin action. I'm going to actually be there live, so that'll be fun.
All right, sweet. We can do a next Tuesday. Hopefully we'll eulogize Jermaine Taylor's boxing career. Not his life.
I hope so.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I
and
hope so.
We'll preview, you know, we'll preview Golovkin and Rubio.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is it's a great fight for to have a 10-1 favorite.
Yeah, for sure. Oh yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And actually, I tweeted about this the other night during the Gonzalez Arce, but I was cracking up because the entire time they're showing you know, previews and stuff for Golovkin Rubio, and I mean, it's to be expected. You know, Rubio's Mexican. I'm in Mexico, but I just had to laugh because the ads were like, you know, do you remember the Super 6 posters that they first came out with when they first announced the tournament, and they had all six guys, and it was Mikkel Kessler and Arthur Abraham in the foreground of the picture?
Yeah.
And then as the fights started changing, they started changing that. Like Andre Durrell and Andre Ward started moving closer to the forefront. Well, in the same regard, like, it's funny because the Rubio picture is, like, you know, this huge thing in front of Golovkin, and he's kind of, like, almost standing in the background looking at him. And I'm like, what? It's just funny.
You guys got that backwards.
Yeah, and, you know, I actually have talked to two random people about it because, like, I have, you know, stacks of boxing shirts and shit like that and just wear them around because I like to, you know, brag that I like boxing, which, you know, it gets me no attention whatsoever. But two people that I've talked to about it were like, oh, are you going to be watching the Veneno fight? And I'm like, who? Because I wasn't really thinking of it in that term. You know, I was like, the what fight? And they're like, you know, Rubio. And I was like, oh, you mean the Golovkin fight? And they're like, yeah, Veneno. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. I will be watching that and rooting for Rubio. Yeah, sure. So that's pretty hilarious down here, I have to say.
All right, man. Well, and just,
what
hey,
else
just
we
remember,
got?
You're
we
not
have anything.
Well, no, I just wanted to say, you know, you're not a real boxing fan unless you watch Bundridge and Carlos Molina twice, once with the sound off.
Yeah. Totally true. I purchased a ticket to Cancun to go watch that, except for I have to ride in a wooden crate, get packed up with peanuts to go in over there. But, I mean, I just don't want anybody questioning my fandom anymore.
Nothing better to do in Cancun than go to a Bundridge Molina fight.
Totally. I mean, yeah, there's no question. You know, dude, if there's anywhere in Cancun to go where you can grind your crotch up on someone's wife, it is where Canine Bundridge's wife is. Everyone knows that.
Well, you have to be president of the money team to be allowed to do that.
Well, whatever. You know, I mean, that's neither here nor there. Wow.
But can't wait
Dude,
for
you
it.
Know what?
Can't wait for the winner. Can't wait for the winner against Canelo on Cinco de Mayo.
You know, one thing, and you can probably hear it in the background, one thing that I have still not gotten used to living in TJ is that the norm, as far as what noise constitutes here, is something entirely different, dude. There will be dogs and shit barking like all day, and like nobody gives a fuck, man. Like living in the US, like if somebody's fucking dog is barking all day, like shit, like dogs get like poisoned and shit, you know? Fucking hear like somebody's dog is barking all day and they're like, good boy,
If you want a really a really quiet place to go in Mexico, go into the arena about halfway through the Bundridge Molina fight. Should be totally cleared out.
That was well played. Yeah, no shit. I like Carlos Molina as much as anybody could like Carlos Molina. You know what I mean? But that's just putting two guys together that are going to make for a dreadful matchup unless something just huge out of nowhere happens, you know, unless like Canine Bundridge, who can pop a little bit, winds up just catching Molina cold or catching him strange or something like that. Cause that's going to be dreadful, bro.
I think Molina's suffered enough for his criminal background by now, you know, his matchmaking of Corey Spinks, Ishe, and Cornelius Bundridge.
And Lara, he fought Aris Landi Lara. I mean,
oh yeah, he fought Lara too. Fuck,
he wound up getting beaten up a little bit by Kirkland before that bunk ass stoppage. You know, yeah, he's paid. He's paid his dues. Well, shit, dude. If we don't have anything else, no more questions, whatever, then let's wrap this shit up. Yeah, we'll be back next week. We'll do some Golovkin, you know, sack stroking and whatnot. And like you said, hopefully we'll be, you know, tolling the 10 count on Jermaine Taylor's career because that's where it needs to be. But thank you, Mr. Foley, as always. It was a pleasure for Mexico.
Thank you.
And thank you to everybody who tuned in live. We always appreciate that. The numbers have been kind of steadily going up, surprisingly, in the last handful of weeks that we've done the show. So that's kind of nice. Thanks again for everybody who tuned in, and thanks to everybody who winds up listening to this later. We'll catch everybody next week. Check out James Foley's stuff on badlefthook.com. My stuff on Queensberry Rules. All right, everybody, take it easy.